I am here with author and illustrator James Artemis Owen, among other things, writer of the Imaginarium Geographica series. So James, you're fairly well known in the industry, but could you tell us something about yourself that our listeners may not know about?
Wow. Okay, that's a great starting for an interview. Something my listeners may not know about. Well, I still like to build tree houses. That's a big thing for me. It was a big thing as a kid in trees that my grandparents had in Arizona, both their vacation home in the White Mountains and in Mesa. And I still do that with my son, Nathaniel. And tree forts and swings, and that's a big Zen activity for me. It's a creative thing, and you know, we talk about using your imagination and writing, and we write these fantastical stories, and that kind of goes back to it. You know, that's a part of childhood that I certainly never left and is still very important to me. If push came to shove, I still like to play in big cardboard boxes and pretend the carpet is lava too, so...
All right, thanks for that. So the first time you were an exhibitor at San Diego Comic-Con, you were the youngest exhibitor ever. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened and that whole experience?
Sure. That was 1986, and my best friend and I had started a comic book publishing company, Fantasy West, and my first comic book was called Predary Terra, and we wanted to find a way to actually market and sell it and make people in the industry aware of it. And I realized that the best way to do it would be an exhibitor at the San Diego Comic-Con. And in those days, they had a two-day trade show beforehand that was professionals only. So publishers, authors, editors, marketing people. And I wanted to be at both shows, the trade show and the consumer show. And I'd been a retailer since I was 13. I'd been selling comic books and doing mail order and designing my own catalogs and... So I followed the retailer news, and I knew about the professional side of it, and I arranged a bank loan with the help of my mother and a great banker so that we could get a booth and rent a U-Haul to take my comic books, and I had an actual booth at the show. I'm sure there were younger people there helping family and friends, but I was the youngest one whose name was actually on all the billing. And at the time, the distributors, there was a distributors group of about a dozen of them that handled all the comics distribution, and they were scheduling private meetings with publishers. And I walked in, and they ushered me out and said, no, we're having meetings with publishers. And I said, I know, I'm your next appointment. And they thought, well, where's your dad? And I said, no, I'm the one, I'm the publisher. And so they let me into the room, and the head of marketing for DC Comics was at the front of the room giving his presentation, and he waved me up. And so I walked up to the front. He took my box of comics out of my hand and then asked me to go get him a coffee. And he thought I was a delivery boy bringing him Batman samples. And so he kept talking and didn't look at what he was passing out, and he started handing out my comic book to all the distributors who looked at it and knew it wasn't a DC comic book, but he wasn't paying any attention. And finally, somebody pointed out to him, you're handing us these, and he turned to me and said, what did you bring me? And I said, that's my comic book, and you're 15 minutes into my presentation time, and what do you want in your coffee? So head of marketing for DC Comics actually presented my comic to all the distributors. And then when it was my turn, they said, well, you've already got the best guy in marketing who's given us your comic. So what can you tell us about it? And it kind of started from there. So I have a long history with people still in the industry that goes back to before I could drive.
That's hilarious. Thanks for that. So you've also done a couple of Kickstarters. In fact, you just recently finished one for coloring books for adults. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Kickstarter, you know, is a great tool for crowdsourcing funds to do a project. And we've done a few things like that in comics with retailers pre-ordering books. And if you got enough retailers to pre-order a book, you had the money to go out and print it and then could sell it. And so Kickstarter is a way of just streamlining that. And it's not a marketing service the way a lot of people mistakenly believe it is. You have to have some sort of presence already. You have to have something. You can't come in cold and finance something with Kickstarter. But I did it with a nonfiction book, Drawing Out the Dragons. I did it with a hardcover collection of my Star Child comic books that went extremely well. And I've done it twice now with coloring books. And it's a great way to connect directly with fans and then help finance things that otherwise with a traditional publisher wouldn't even be on the schedule for a year and a half. We just finished the Kickstarter for this coloring book trio, three books in one. And the funding closed about a week and a half ago. The goal was met. And in about another week, they're going to the printer. And they're going to be shipping a few weeks after that. I mean, that's amazing to be able to have the potential to do that.
So why coloring books?
Because coloring books are the hottest freaking category in publishing right now. And no one knows why. It started with Joanna Basford in England doing a couple of these coloring books targeted at grownups. And they've been around for a long time as a concept, but she's the one that got some real traction with it and sold about 1.5 million of these coloring books targeted to adults. And that kicked off a trend that I wasn't aware of when I started the Kickstarter for the coloring book of images from my novels. And all of my drawings are pen and ink, and people have bought prints for years. But every once in a while, people have commented, oh, that'd be fun to color. And I did some color pages of it for a calendar a few years ago. But I thought, you know, that might actually be a fun thing to do. So we assembled it and launched the Kickstarter. And halfway through the Kickstarter, I started seeing all these articles about this is the hot new trend. So purely by accident, I stepped into something amazing. And then we did a Kickstarter for three more, and it overfunded too. And it's all art from the novels that I've had, which is the amazing part, is so many people are excited to help pledge and support a project that's full of art from books that have been available for 9 years.
Sounds like that was a happy accident. So you also mentioned you did the nearly complete Essential Star Child. Why nearly complete?
Star Child was the graphic novel series that I did through my own company, Coppervale Press, and then through Image Comics through most of the 90s. And then we hit a new decade in 2004. I'd done magazines and a few other projects. But then I started really working on novels. And when the first of the Imaginarium Geographica books, Here There Be Dragons, came out in 2006, that started a whole different kind of career. And it was a full-time one. And I'd never finished the last Star Child stories I wanted to do. And we never had any one single collection of those. We had different trade paperbacks and hardcovers. But a lot of people that bought the Dragon books wanted to buy all the Star Child material, and there was no one source. There was no one volume or collection that they could go to. So we decided to do the 20th anniversary, nearly complete Essential Star Child. And we called it Nearly Complete because I'd never finished the last storyline. There's several hundred pages of comics and lots of sketchbook sections and cover art. There are two complete graphic novels and a partial graphic novel in that story. And I never finished it because in all the years I was drawing and writing the Dragon books, my style changed, it matured and developed enough that finishing the comic book series, it would not have matched. I had developed too much, and so what I decided to do instead is reinvent that story, and I'm reinterpreting my own favorite best work as a series of illustrated novels called Fool's Hollow. And I'm combining all the things I learned doing the comics and all the things I learned doing the novels into this one new project. And that's how I'm going to finish the story. So there were things in the comics I can't duplicate in the novels. They deserve to have their own showcase in that big Essential Star Child book. But to really finish it and tell the story the best way that I can, it needed to be started over from the beginning.
Okay, thanks for that. You also mentioned you did the Kickstarter for Drawing Out the Dragons, which has since expanded into the Meditations trilogy. Can you talk a little bit about those?
When I started doing school visits for Here There Be Dragons and the other novels Simon & Schuster published, I realized pretty quickly on I didn't want to stand in front of a group of kids and do a book commercial for my books. If I had the opportunity to talk to students especially, I wanted to tell them things that I thought were more important to share about how to make decisions about your life and how to overcome obstacles to do the things that you love. And that turned into a talk that we called Drawing Out the Dragons, that at one point we had a recording of it and I had it transcribed, and that became an ebook Drawing Out the Dragons, that then we did a Kickstarter for to turn into a print book, that then we turned into a publishing deal, that then turned into two other books in a series called The Meditations. And we're actually in the middle of negotiating a publishing deal to do hardcovers of all three. And that talk is turned into the most popular thing that I actually do at schools and libraries. So most of my personal visits after signings are doing talks based on Drawing Out the Dragons. And so becoming a bit of a motivational and inspirational speaker and writer seems to be a natural extension of what I was already doing with the novels and comics.
Okay, thanks for that. And that's a very powerful presentation. One of the things you're most known for is Chronicles of the Imaginarium Geographica. How would you describe that series to someone who hasn't read it?
The best way to describe it is that the Imaginarium Geographica is an atlas of maps to imaginary lands. So every land you've ever read about and every myth, legend, fable, and fairy tale has a corresponding map that's in that atlas. And caretakers in the real world have taken care of this book through the centuries, and they're people we know, people like Chaucer and Shakespeare and Charles Dickens and Jules Verne and Mark Twain. And so there are a lot of real world characters that I mix into this. So people like Jules Verne wrote novels we think are fiction, but were actual events that happened to him in the lands in this atlas. And so my take was to start in World War I with three young men who were initiated as new caretakers of this Geographica and the adventures that they have together learning about all of these fantastical, mythical lands.
And your situation is a little unusual in that you actually did the cover art for those. How did that come about?
That came about because I'm stubborn and a little nervy. Because most authors typically don't have a say in the design or covers of their work. I had illustrated my own work for a couple of decades because of the comic books. And we made that a selling point, that I also illustrated the books. And I wanted them to look like James Owen books. We turned down a couple of publishing offers because they didn't want to let me do the covers or the illustrations. And then we found Simon & Schuster, who liked it. And liked it because my stuff, it's line work. It's old school pen and ink work that has color added to it for the covers, which made them stand out from a lot of the soft focus, airbrushy Photoshop colors that a lot of covers use now. And the first one won a gold medal at the New York Book Awards for best cover on a hardcover book. And after that, they've never blinked. So early on, there was a little dissension about it. And I told him, listen, I'm going to unplug my phone, go home and draw the cover. And the one that I gave them is the one that we used. The art director came up with an idea of using a monochromatic color scheme. So the first one's blue, second one's red. So the series is recognizable. But across a bookstore, you can tell each one distinctively from the other. It was a great design. And the very first signing I did for that book was at Jim Hanley's Universe in New York City. And the first guy in line had copies of Praedari Terra that I published as a teenager at San Diego. He had copies of all the Starchild paperbacks and hardcovers and comics, and he had five copies of Here There Be Dragons. And he said, I bought all of your publications here. I'm going to keep buying them as long as you keep doing books. And my editor and art director were there, and they said, so why you buy comics mostly? This is a comic book store. Why did you buy the novel? And he said, because it's a James Owen book. Look at the cover. It's obvious. And my editor turned to the art director and said, I'm really glad we let him do the cover.
So how long does one of those take you to do?
Typically, one of the covers or one of the illustrations is 1 to 3 working days. Some go slower, some go faster. That original cover for Here There Be Dragons took about 3 days to do. The cover for the last book in the series, which is called The First Dragon, I did the initial sketch in 10 minutes, and it came out perfectly. So we enlarged it and transferred it to an art board, and it took maybe 6-7 hours to ink. But the initial sketch is identical to the finished cover. So sometimes the magic just works.
And there's also been some concession to the art director, as I understand. The Indigo King originally had a different image altogether, and the Dragon of Winter was a different color. So how did that all happen?
You are a well-prepared interviewer, Gama. Wow. You are absolutely right. The Indigo King, the third book, had a cover of the cartographer who made all the maps in the Atlas being exiled to an island called the Keep of Time. And he was in a small boat, and it was this beautiful pastoral image, purples, reflections in the water, and marketing wanted a bigger dragon. So we took one of the interior illustrations with several dragons on it, enlarged it, colored it purple. That was the cover. So the only place the other one ever actually appeared was on the back of the original paperbacks of book two. So collector's item. Then on book six, Dragons of Winter, I'd arranged all these in the colors of the rainbow, and this was partially job security, because that meant from the start I was telling them there are seven books, so my publisher always expected there would be seven books, and it was supposed to be the orange cover. And my agent called up and said, well, the art director, he liked it, but the head of marketing and sales said Dragons of Winter needs winter colors, and this is orange, and it's too warm. And she said they were afraid to ask you, because they thought you'd be upset, but they want to make it teal. So a kind of a light blue. And I said, okay. And they said, what do you think about that? And I said, whose suggestion was the teal? And she said, head of sales and marketing. And I said, I love teal. That sounds great. And you have to decide which hill you want to die on. And, you know, making the head of sales and marketing happy over just a color change on a cover, that's one of those easy decisions. So
sounds like it. So you mentioned the caretakers of the Imaginarium Geographica were these famous authors. And I understand you started a project to take some of their public domain works and basically rebrand them as part of your universe. So can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, we're kind of calling it the 100 Books Project. And what it is some of these great works of literature, you know, Three Musketeers, Around the World in 80 Days, you know, they're public domain, obviously, and there are lots of publishers that do them. And I'd always wanted to illustrate some of these great works. You know, I would love to illustrate Shakespeare, for example. Love to illustrate the Iliad. And finding a publisher that wants to do that, it's hard to get a lot of enthusiasm for a book that 50 other publishers release editions of. But then I realized I was in a unique position where I could connect all of these authors because I already had. Because most of these legendary authors have appeared as characters in the Imaginarium Geographica books. And I thought if we called this collectively the Imaginarium Geographica Classics Library, I could do editions of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with a cover by me, then the actual unabridged work, and then a portrait of Jules Verne, and then a two-page vignette talking about how he became a caretaker of the Imaginarium Geographica. We do a nice trade paperback of it, but also put it out as an ebook. They match the Dragon books. We'll also have a guide, a teacher's guide, that annotates all of the literary references in my novels and then connects them to the actual novels. So teachers can, say, teach the Indigo King and then connect it to Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court and Mark Twain, and then teach Mark Twain with my own edition of Mark Twain's book. And it sounds like way too much fun not to do. So we're hoping to be starting that sometime in the next few months.
All right, I look forward to that. From time to time, there's been talk of an Imaginarium Geographica movie. Is there any news on that front?
Of that, we'd originally had the rights with Here There Be Dragons with David Goyer and David Heyman. David Heyman did the Harry Potter movies, and Goyer, of course, wrote Batman Begins and a lot of the DC Comics properties. And I wrote the screenplay for it. Warner was supposed to be producing it. Then we had a writer's strike, and then they split the last Harry Potter movie into two. And at that point, I had some other producers on it that I wasn't as happy working with. And my attorney managed to get the rights back. We didn't have Warner exercise the last option, so I had to turn down a big check. But I had signed this deal when nobody knew if the books would be popular or not. And right now, Here There Be Dragons is in 20 languages. And if I could get the rights back, I wanted to. And so there's been talk about developing it as a TV series, kind of like Game of Thrones with less sex and violence. Everything is Game of Thrones with less sex and violence. That's been in the works. But, you know, everything in Hollywood is hurry up and wait, and it takes lots of time, and I'd still like to see that happen. We have three new omnibus editions of those books coming out from Simon & Schuster. that's spurring a renewed interest in that. And so it's always possible. But with Hollywood, the only power you have is saying no. And if you want things done properly, you say no until you finally feel like you can say yes. That's what we're doing. So still have hopes for it.
How much time do you spend on writing-related tasks as opposed to art or drawing-related tasks?
Lately, it's been fairly evenly divided because I've also I just finished the illustrations for a nonfiction book called Bandersnatch about Tolkien and Lewis and their Inklings friends at Oxford, and then I did a corresponding coloring book, both for Kent State University Press. Those have been almost entirely art. I've had a couple of other projects where it's almost entirely writing. Like my Myth World novels that Wordfire Press publishes. Fool's Hollow is kind of half and half because it's full-page illustrations, it's frontispieces, it's chapter headings, and spot illustrations. So it's more illustrated than a typical book, and so it's kind of evenly divided. But that also keeps the work fresh because you get tired of doing one, you can switch to the other. You get tired of both, you watch The West Wing for 2 days.
Okay, so anybody who knows you even slightly knows you really like Superman. So what draws you to that?
Originally, I was just a big comic book fan when I was a kid, but I spent a lot of time in a hospital when I was in fifth grade and found a paperback, Superman Last Son of Krypton, that really had an impact on me, had a big effect on my life. And because I had all that downtime, I really got into reading comic books, and Superman was the thing. He's that nice guy. You know, something I've always tried to be was the nice guy when I was growing up. And the guy that, when somebody's in trouble, reaches out to help. He doesn't think about it. He doesn't ask what's in it for him. He just shows up and said, well, what can I do? What can I help you? That's what Superman does. He loves his mother. He loves his dog. And my favorite distinction, actually, is somebody had said, Superman is what he can do. Clark Kent is who he is. And to me, that metaphor works really well, that Clark Kent is the nice guy that everybody trusts, but when you need to, he has these other abilities that means he can do things no one else can do to help you. And can you think of a better role model?
So what are you working on now?
At the moment, it's primarily Fool's Hollow. We've also had these four coloring books, All the Colors of Magic, which we just finished the Kickstarter for. And then I've got a new series of coloring book mysteries, where the objects that you color help to solve a riddle or a puzzle called the Mysterium Mysterium mystery books. And they're coloring books that have a mystery woven in. So, again, targeted to grown-ups and something a little more fun to do. And then also, hopefully, a couple of film projects in the works. So, basically, I've got my schedule pretty stacked, but it's all stuff I really love to do. And even the Imaginarium Geographica has some new work because I'm actually working on something I've teased about for years. It's a in-series graphic novel with the caretakers of the Imaginarium Geographica. It's a plot thread I left dangling from the fourth book. And I'm going to do it as a mini-series that we then collect into a graphic novel. And I'm actually going to be co-writing that with my friend Kristen Luna. And I'm going to be doing the covers and working with several other illustrators on the actual project. And because it's me, it's going to be canon. It's not somebody we hired. It's not something licensed out. It's me, the creator, doing a graphic novel series of the Imaginarium Geographica stories. How do you get more full circle than that?
Yeah, that sounds great. That was all I had for you, James. So thank you for taking the time for doing this interview.
Thank you much, Gamma. I enjoyed it a lot.